Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Comté Cheese Association. Comté, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at comté-usa.com. That's comté-usa.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're spotlighting the people who prepare our meat before it reaches our plates. We hear from whole animal butchers, the brains behind a meat vending machine, California cattle ranchers, and a master of charcuterie who isn't using meat at all.
It's like a smoked and grilled center stalk of the broccoli, and then it gets finished with some mustard, barbecue sauce, and sauerkraut.
Ranching and farming being as difficult as it is, you know, it's just one thing after another. And at some point, you just give up.
I had a wild idea that if I learned butchery, maybe I could start to be kind of a link in the supply chain.
Listen to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cutting the Curd. I'm your host, Kara Warren. We've had a few tough times this year, but I can't imagine opening up a new business, let alone a creamery. Well, today on our show, we're going to find out just how that works. Please let me introduce to you Veronica Pedraza, head cheesemaker of Blakesville Creamery and repeat offender of Cutting the Curd. Veronica, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Oh, you know, good. Just chilling out in the city and... getting used to life as it is, as you know. So tell us about everything. Like, I can't believe you started a creamery in the middle of a pandemic. When did you first start planning this creamery?
Well, I was going to say, it wasn't like we chose this time to start a business. This has been in the works for about 3 years. It was a pretty long and exhausting process.
You weren't trying to line it up with COVID. You didn't want to have it just arrive at that exact moment.
No, we started construction last July actually, and we were scheduled to sort of be complete and up and running the first week of April. So you know, it was both a blessing in disguise and a little bit of a curse as well.
But how did you find Blakesville Creamery? Like, where was it like that the idea was born? Like, you were working in Chicago and then somebody introduced you, or you were looking for an area to start this, or?
It was actually shortly after I left Meadowood Farms. I went actually to ACS in Denver, and you know, it was interesting to sort of be at ACS and not, you know, be in the competition, to sort of just not be a cheesemaker at ACS, but to sort of be a casual bystander. And I was sitting down at the Vermont Cheese Council breakfast, and Andy Hatch sat next to me. And we just started talking, and, you know, he was asking me what I was planning on doing with my life.
Awesome.
And I said, you know, that I didn't really know, but, you know, cheese was always in the future. And he said, well, I know these people that have a goat farm. And he was like, do you want me to connect you? And I was like, sure. And like most things that happen like that, I didn't really pay it very much mind. And I didn't really think it would lead anywhere.
Nice. Had you worked with goats before, or was it only cow's milk you were working with before?
I've actually worked with all three milks. But
okay.
Meadowood, we had sheep's milk. At Jasper Hill, cow's milk, obviously. But my my first foray into cheesemaking was as an apprentice at Sweetgrass Dairy in Thomasville, Georgia. And this will, you know, be kind of a blast for the past, but they had goats at one time. And so,
yeah, cool.
So I did. I made goat cheese actually as an apprentice cheesemaker, you know, 13 years ago.
Wow. I just because it was fascinating. Like in my mind, I was like, she didn't just start a huge creamery with 900 goats and not know how. I can't imagine like learning, hey, how do I milk a goat? No. So you Andy Hatch leads you into this awesome situation where you deep dive into the situation, which is it's located in Wisconsin towards the eastern side, eastern south side. I don't know.
We are in Port Washington, Wisconsin, which is about 30 minutes north of Milwaukee. Our farm is actually right on Lake Michigan.
Okay, is that very cold? I would imagine yes.
I mean, no.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Having lived in Vermont and upstate New York, I'm going to say that Wisconsin winters are a little bit light.
Oh. But
I may be offending some people.
No, good to know. So the terroir is very grassy. I mean, you tell me how it is.
Grassy?
Wow, you know what I'm saying, Veronica. I'm trying to get a picture of Blakesville Creamery right now in my mind.
Well, you know, Wisconsin is definitely flatter than Vermont or upstate New York. But there are parts, you know, that are that the glaciers didn't touch. However, we're not near there. So it is, I would say, some rolling hills, maybe. Very green and, you know, lots of water.
Okay. And so you're setting this up, and all of a sudden now we're in this situation that has thrown us all completely off what we know. What were the first few things that you saw change right away that you were like, oh, this is a different obstacle that I didn't expect?
Well, I think initially we had a product line in mind that we sort of quickly reconfigured. I'm doing some things that I didn't want to be doing and I didn't think I'd be doing, but are like a necessity. And actually, you know, I'm kind of having fun with it.
Oh, that's cool. So like what is it exactly that like which cheese or should it or
We're,
I guess it's
we're,
a cheese
I mean,
recipe.
A lot of fresh chev, you know. The first thing that I saw happen with COVID was that, you know, soft cheese, that market just took a nosedive. And that is kind of, I think, my specialty, what I'm good at. That's what I was planning on doing a lot of. And, you know, fresh chev is certainly, you know, a soft cheese, but it's, you know, got a different kind of market. And we've had really good reception to ours. So, you know, it's been kind of nice. I'm also making some like cheese for, I wouldn't say like hard cheese, but, some more aged stuff that'll hopefully ride ride this COVID wave with me.
Awesome. Maybe it'll have an awesome nickname as well. you can beat a lazy lady at, you know, her name skills.
I'll never be a lazy lady at naming cheeses. She is.
Oh,
she,
I don't know. I feel like you could do it though. But anyway, so you have these cheeses, and they're expected to come out in the spring of 2021, or is it sooner? Actually, it would be sooner than that, probably. I guess that's too far, actually.
They're scheduled to come out like next month. We've got product that's going to sort of more local markets right now. We're getting ready for some distribution a little bit here in the fourth quarter.
Well, no, that's amazing.
You know, I am making some soft cheese and some soft ripened stuff. But definitely, you know, I wasn't planning on making some, you know, more aged cheese. I wasn't planning on making fresh chev. You know, I wanted to turn this into a little Robiola factory, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, and how did it work with your cheese making team? Because I assume it's not just you making all this cheese. How did that work as well with the other cheese making people there?
Well, I just have one person assisting me in the creamery. Okay. Helping with cleaning and some affinage and stuff like that. But, you know, we have 1,200 goats on the farm right now. And we were a commercial dairy before this venture began. And we have a contract with another milk producer, or cheese producer, I should say, here in Wisconsin. And so I'm not required to use 100% of our production right now, which is, that's been really nice, not having to make cheese every day.
Yeah, that's a great buffer. I didn't even realize there was such a contract that could exist like that. I figured you had the herd, you were responsible to buy that milk, and that was all you had, that was it. You know, it was like a verbal or actually a contractual agreement. I didn't realize there was such flexibility.
Typically there isn't. We are sort of in a very fortunate position though. And I was definitely worried about sort of that relationship when COVID hit as well. You know, we had been planning this. So the goat dairy has been here for about 10 years now. It was originally a cow dairy, and it got converted to goats. But we've been planning for this creamery for 3 years, so we did sort of plan for an increase in milk production to coincide with the launching of the creamery. And that got a little hectic for a while, just because we had all this excess milk that we couldn't mm-hmm. actually process.
Oh, I see. So that's kind of... To make up for that extra milk, you started making the fresh cheese then, the fresh chev. That was the strategy? Is that how you handled it?
We just sort of allocated our milk in a different way for fresh chev. But, you know, our goal is to use maybe like a third of our milk production this year and incrementally scale that up and, you know, maybe depending on where the market goes and what happens with the economy. You know, we'd like to be able to use 100% of our milk in 3 years.
Okay, I see. That makes sense. So did the pandemic in any way cause you to spend more money at all? Was a moment that you had to spend more money?
A little bit. Sort of the biggest thing that happened for us was that when Wisconsin put the stay-at-home order in place, the Department of Agriculture suspended inspections and licensing for new plants. So at the end of March, basically I got notification that they were not going to come and do an inspection of our plant until that order was lifted, which it wasn't lifted until the end of May.
Oh, wow.
And then there was basically a backlog of all the existing plants that had, you know, missed their inspections. So we didn't actually get our license until the first week of July.
Whoa. So then was there any help from the government or the state to help you with all this time that you lost because there was no inspection?
Absolutely not.
I take that chuckle as a big no, but yeah. Was there any help?
I don't think the government's doing much for anybody, but particularly dairy farmers or cheesemakers.
Interesting. Well, I mean, you know, Wisconsin has a strong dairy economy, so I thought, I mean, they would have something out there, but I guess not.
I don't know. I feel like I ended up spending money spending a lot of money with the Department of Agriculture, but I won't, you know, go on record.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's okay. That's fair.
They're great people. They're just doing their jobs too.
Exactly. Yeah, I understand. It's like due process stuff. But now you're kind of, it sounds like you're coming around the bend. I feel like there's been sort of a, do you feel like you're kind of back on track now?
I think that we're on track as best we can be. I mean, the difficult thing to assess right now is that, you know, we're starting at zero. So everything is growth right now. So everything looks good in that
regard.
You're
up 1,000%.
You know, it's whether or not we can sustain this long term. And I think that has a lot to do with, you know, just sort of the outcome of the election, I think, will have some impact on the dairy business and the cheesemaking business and, you know, whether or not we end up in a long-term economic depression. But it's too early to say.
Yes. And on that very light note, I'm going to take a quick break for a commercial right here. I have Veronica Pedraza on air with us. This is Cutting the Curd, and I'm Kara Warren, and we'll be right back.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Conte Cheese Association. Conte Cheese Association represents the Conte PDO, Conte Protected Designation of Origin, in the USA. Conte is a raw milk cooked pressed cheese from the Jura Mountains of France. There, every day, 2,500 family farms deliver milk to over 150 local cheesemaking facilities, or fruitiers. This milk must be transformed into Conte within 24 hours of milking to preserve the lactic microflora in the milk, ensuring the cheese's aromatic potential. About 105 gallons of milk are required to craft a single wheel of Conte. Conte takes time to acquire its flavors in the affinage cellars. After 8 months of aging by dedicated affineur on average, each wheel of Conte is graded and shipped to market. No wheel of Conte is the same. Its flavors speak to the pastures where the cows grazed, the season in which it was made, the particular craftsmanship of the cheesemaker, and the time spent in the aging cellar. Therefore, every wheel of Conte is unique. Learn more about Conte, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at conte-usa.com. That's conte-usa.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back. This is Cutting the Curd with Kara Warren. I have Veronica Pedraza on air with Blakesville Creamery, the new one in Wisconsin that I'm excited to be learning about. She survived a pandemic in terms of starting a creamery and dealing with the all the different government things that you need to deal with, plus making cheese. So now I'm kind of interested to hear how is it making goat cheese in terms of, you say the business is growing for you. What else besides, so you have aged cheese you're going to be doing, you have the fresh cheese you're doing. Is there a wash rind in there as well?
For sure. We've got two little soft ripen cheeses that are sort of in the works right now. One is called Lake Breeze. It's a small little geo-ripened, like, I wouldn't say Craton, but it's about 5 ounces. And then we have another cheese called Afterglow, which is sort of like a variation on the Lake Breeze, but we wash it with Nuglaris Brewing's Belgian Red, which is a like cherry beer made with cherries from Door County.
Oh my God, I can't wait for that. I can't believe you're doing that. First of all, listeners, Nuglaris, am I saying that right, is it's a beer only you can buy in Wisconsin. Am I correct about that?
You're 100% correct. And
I love that.
Their fruit beers are pretty coveted. But I've always wanted to do something with their beer and cheese. So started washing it with that, and it gives it a really nice, you can actually taste the beer in the cheese. It's super fruity.
Oh, I can't wait. That's going to be fabulous. Because also, Door County, as I once visited, is known for its cherry production. So that's going to be amazing. And does it have? You said it has a reddish kind of tint to the cheese as well.
It is a little. The cheese ends up being like sort of a little peachy colored, which is really sort of where the name Afterglow is coming from. It's got a little color on it.
Cool. No, that's going to be, so where can people in the future buy your cheese?
In the future?
Well, or now, sorry, pardon me.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to tell you where in the future we're going to be. It may come as a surprise to some people.
Touche. Okay, you know what? Well, right now, if you want, shout out a few places.
You can find us in Chicago and in Milwaukee. I'll give a shout out to All Together Now. The Beautiful Rind is another great spot. Daisy's Market, Olivia's, Local Foods. We're on a bunch of restaurant menus right now.
No, that's perfect. That's perfect. I just want just a few places so we can spread the love, you know? Yeah. So I guess a follow-up question. Now, have you always been a head cheesemaker, or is this is the first time you've been a head cheesemaker? Because I wanted to know, what does it mean to you to be a head cheesemaker?
I've been a head cheesemaker for quite some time now. I spent 5 years as a head cheesemaker at Meadowood Farms. And prior to that, I worked at Jasper Hill, sort of as their creamery manager, head cheesemaker as well. Head cheese is the big cheese. Here I do literally everything. So I make cheese, but I also, clean everything. Take care of affinage. I pack all of our orders. I even deliver all of our orders right now.
You're a Renaissance woman then. You're doing it all.
I'm juggling it all. Hopefully not for, very long, but for me, being head cheesemaker means all the ins and outs of the business.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. And I guess then I wanted to see is, do you have any words of advice for other women who are looking to be cheesemakers, or are there any specific resources they should look to for the listeners who might be female cheesemakers out there?
there are not a lot of resources for cheesemakers in this country. The University of Wisconsin Center for Dairy Research has some great classes for people that I think are sort of aspiring to be cheesemakers. Do you mean people that want to be cheesemakers or people that are cheesemakers?
Oh, I think there's a bit of both that might listen to the program. So, and I guess out of my own curiosity, I was wondering if there was anything female focused, just because I'm not sure, especially in Wisconsin, just by looking at, I guess, photos of people online, it seems to be mostly men that make cheese in Wisconsin. And I was wondering if there was sort of a program or an educational resource out there. But that was just my curiosity bringing me there.
There's nothing specifically geared towards women. I think that I know that there's definitively one master cheesemaker in Wisconsin who is a woman. Her name is Pam, and she works for Sartori. There might be another one, but I'm not exactly sure.
Okay. Well, no, that's pretty interesting. And have you met Pam? Are you guys aware
of
each other?
Yeah, I met her at a Culture Cheese event in Los Angeles a few years ago. It was just exciting. A master cheesemaker is another level of cheesemaking in Wisconsin. You have to have so many years of making a certain style of cheese. And then there's a bunch of coursework and tests that go with it. So it's not something that you just, it's different from being a licensed cheesemaker in Wisconsin.
I see. And would you one day hope to be, this level of cheesemaking, a master cheesemaker? I'm like almost afraid to say it. Yes. A master cheesemaker.
Sure. I mean, that sounds great. I don't know that the styles of cheese that I make would allow me to be a master cheesemaker. Most of the coursework, I think, in Wisconsin is geared towards like cheddar and Swiss and sort of more of your commodity products and your more, your bigger markets for things.
Yeah, totally. I just wasn't sure, because it's such a prestigious title, master cheesemaker. I just was in my mind, I was like, well, Veronica, you could be a master cheesemaker.
Maybe in 20 years.
I will interview you in 20 years if that's the case.
They have to add, products made by goat's milk.
God. Wait a second. I need to research this better. Is that not in there? Is goat's milk not in the master cheesemaker? Oh my goodness.
Not to my knowledge. Like I said, it's mostly I think you've got cheddar, you've got Colby, you've got Swiss, sort of and there might be some Italian style cheeses in there. But you become a master in a specific discipline, cheddar or Swiss or whatever. I mean, there are cheesemakers that hold multiple titles for different types of cheese.
I need to research this more. It's a very interesting subject that I don't know enough about.
Be why there aren't a lot of women master cheesemakers in Wisconsin, though, because, I think there are quite a few women cheesemakers in Wisconsin, but most of them are working with small ruminant animals, either sheep or goats. So
it makes sense. It kind of brings me to what I was going to ask you, which is, why is Blakesville Creamery different than other cheesemakers in Wisconsin? I think the fact that you're making goat's milk cheeses is a very big distinguishing factor.
Well, there's definitely some, there's LeClaire Farms here, which, they have a lot more goats than we do. And they do make a lot of goat cheese. I would say that the thing that differentiates us in Wisconsin is that we are focused on making soft ripened cheese. And I would say more, I think on my certificate, it lists that I make French style cheeses.
Awesome.
So, perfect. You know, I did, during the building and the construction of this, had some interesting conversations with our contractors, you know, because they were like, well, how many vats are you going to have? And we use sort of different equipment than, you know, I think what a normal cheddar producer uses. And I think a lot of those guys were familiar with that sort of operation. And, you know, we got where we needed to go with them, but we had definitely had some interesting conversations to start with.
Oh my God. I wish I could be a fly on the wall for all of that. I can only imagine you trying to explain very, very eloquently a lot of like almost French techniques to them. And they're like, so you're making cheddar, huh? And you're like, no. sorry. That was just in my brain, the cartoon version of that conversation. But,
someone asked me why I would make so many small cheeses when I could just make one big cheese. they saw all my multi-molds and they were like, well, why would you make 300 of those when you could just make one big one? And then, you know, and I was like, well, it's not exactly, it doesn't exactly work that way.
You're like, what's this crotin business that you're trying to put forward? I don't understand. Oh man, I got to visit. This is going to be funny. So I guess, I like to do a segment, which is what's in your fridge. So what's in your fridge right now? What kind of cheese, what kind of fermented object is happening in your fridge right now?
The fridge here at work or my fridge at home?
Oh my God. You're this type. I love it. You choose the fridge you wish to describe. I'll let you go with that.
The fridge here just has rennet and antibiotic strips in it.
Oh, yeah. Okay, the fridge at home then. The fridge at home. Go to the fridge at home, please.
I don't know. I just cleaned it out, to be honest with you. So a lot of vegetables right now. There's a ton of cheese that I got from another cheese friend, Lydia Burns.
Okay. What kind of cheese is that? I mean, you gotta spread the wealth here.
What did she gave me a lot of cheese that I would like.
oh my God.
She's teaching cheese classes to students at Kendall College, which is a culinary school in Chicago. And she's doing these like, she makes like these tasting kits. So she gave me sort of like the ends of what she had there, but I got some really good Gabrielle Coulet Roquefort in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some Tuata was in there. A really nice Manchego. She gave me a lot of sheep's milk cheese, knowing that I have an affinity for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. From your Meadowood days. That does make sense. Would you ever make a blue cheese? Side note. Just curious.
Yeah, I would say that blue cheese after soft cheese is in my repertoire.
Okay, cool. No, I know it's when you make a lot of different cheeses, it's hard to do a blue as well. So that's cool.
Initially, had plans to make blue cheese. I think right now with the way things are, I sort of put the brakes on that. But you know, the most exciting thing that's happened with this pandemic is that honestly, I've had an opportunity to just enjoy the creamery in a way that I don't think I would have if this hadn't happened. It kind of just slowed everything down. You know, I literally had 3 months in here where I just got to like kind of get used to everything and play around. I'm starting to really understand my milk and the potential of my milk. And, you know, because all milks are not created equal, and they don't all make the same type of cheese or are even suited towards making certain types of cheese. So I think learning the full potential of my milk is the most exciting thing. And I think a blue cheese will be in our future.
Oh man, that sounds great. Yeah, it's interesting how it did the COVID pandemic, like it did slow everything down. Like you, it sounds like you got a lot of R&D time without a lot of demand pressuring you to just make cheese. So that's a nice relief from what I'm hearing. I guess then overall, over the course of your career, what would you say you're most proud of then? Is this the crowning moment right here? Or was there something else that you're most proud of within your cheese career?
This is probably the thing that I'm most proud of. There was literally, well, where I'm sitting right now, there was a barn 3 years ago that had to come down in order for this thing to get built. And every aspect of this place was designed by me. I like to call this my dreamery, because it's my dream creamery.
Oh my god. Yeah, that's, I like that. Good use of the word dreamery for creamery. You are a pun master, my friend. My very last question is, I guess, I mean, it's hard to know right now because you're still at the beginning of this beautiful dreamery. But where do you see Blakesville Creamery in the next few years? You've mentioned blue cheese, aged cheese, but is there certain awards you'd like to see? Master Cheesemaker one day? You know, I mean, I guess you probably have a 5-year, maybe even a 10-year plan, but what do you foresee in the future?
I mean, generally, I'm an optimistic person, and I try to remain positive, even when it seems like the world is, you know, pretty much ending. What I'd like to see is I'd like to build this business. I'd like to have a nice repertoire of cheeses, but more importantly, I want this to be a good place to work that provides people with a good quality of life and a livable wage, and or a more than livable wage, and a place that keeps this community in agriculture. That's my hope for this business.
Well, great. I hope to do a segment in 10 years, you know, a decade of difference on you. I just want to say it's been great to have you on the show. I am really looking forward to trying your cheeses. You're a cheesemaker that's been fun to watch. And now that you have your own dreamery creamery, it's fun. It's going to be great. Whenever we get to leave our spaces and I can see you at a food show next, I can't wait to talk. And this is great. Congratulations on doing this.
Thank you. It'll be kind of hard to, I think, get back to the Javits Center, you know, considering that it was like going to be a COVID hospital. Just.
Oh, yeah. 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 Well, you know. Maybe I'll see you at ACS. Maybe we'll meet in Iowa. It's kind of the middle.
Okay. I hope so. I'm sort of, that's the one thing that, it's been nice not to have to go to those things a little bit. But I do miss Cheese Camp, and I miss all my fellow campers.
There we go. All right. Well, listeners, you've heard it here. Veronica, Blakesville Creamery. Look out for it. Thank you all for listening, and eat more cheese.
Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you.
Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.